This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. It is Thursday, the 28th of April, and today's podcast is lovingly curated, as ever, by our producer, Aiza Havilia. Right, what have we got for you? First up, going to jump into our top stories this morning, the consumer spending boom here in the UAE. We got data from the company that runs the credit card machines at your supermarket and macro data from the IMF. So that's all to come. We're going to be talking real estate as well. Always enjoy speaking to Greg Fewer. He's the finance chief down at Aldar Properties. Good set of quarterly numbers from them. He's going to talk to us about the story behind the numbers, whether it's flogging villas in Abu Dhabi or their real estate venture in Egypt. Energy, of course, front and centre at the moment with the situation happening in the Ukraine and Russia at the moment. Christoph Ruhl is with Columbia University. Professor Ruhl is an energy expert there. His thoughts on what it means for gas prices, oil prices and far more. And finally, circling back to real estate a little bit later on, John Lyons of Espace Real Estate. All of that to come. First up, though, here are our top business stories. Tom, lots of stories about the UAE booming, but it comes not in the context of a global boom, a rising tide lifting all boats. We seem to be the exception rather than the rule. And that always makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable because no one likes to revel in anyone else's demise. We've got that IMF report overnight. We just heard from Christoph there from Columbia University saying, yeah, high oil prices benefits the UAE. We've got those numbers from Network International. The payment numbers are better than pre-pandemic levels. And yet we can't ignore the fact, and you've been looking at these warning signs, that a lot of people are around the region and around the world are having a tough time at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, everything comes with a caution these days, doesn't it? And I think you're quite right. It's very difficult to sort of sit here and go, well, we're all right, Jack. I know things are tough around the world, etc. But, you know, we're still pumping oil and we're in a good place. It's a positioning thing, isn't it? We're in a good place. But as you look at all of these warnings coming through, and there have been three overnight that I picked up on. There was a World Bank statement coming out talking about the Russia-Ukraine conflict and saying the fact that it's contributed to an historic shock to commodity markets that will keep global prices high until the end of 2024. Doom and gloom, according to the World Bank. The spike in energy prices, biggest since 73, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was
it,
yeah.
Yesterday. A jump in food prices, most we've seen since 2008. So commodity markets outlook report that came out yesterday from the World Bank, and it didn't make for good reading. They said overall this amounts to the largest commodity shock we've experienced since the 70s. That's not our thoughts. That's according to Inder McGill, the World Bank's Vice President for Equitable Growth, Finance and Institutions. That's the World Bank's take on it. As we mentioned, we have got the IMF report that's come out here, which, yeah, is okay to a certain degree because commodity-rich part of the world, still pumping, still part of the solution to some of the problems as well with OPEC and the region's sort of involvement with that. But that comes with warnings as well. Gathering international cooperation, necessary to help prevent food crisis in the Middle East as a wider region. And again, you mentioned just then, you know, we're talking about a huge region here, and therefore there are geographies that are well placed to try and combat this, but there are those that are not. That's coming from the IMF regional director, who's been giving a number of reports on the local region of late. That's Jihad Azor, who's been giving his take. Global action needed to prevent food crisis in the Middle East and North Africa, according to the IMF. And the last of those ones was the news coming through the WHO and UNICEF yesterday, who also reported the launch of an emergency fund. They were warning of an increased risk of measles, with worldwide cases up nearly 80%, basically saying that there's a perfect storm of measles potential around the world, that is, because of vaccine delays, supply chain and other contributing factors.
Well, it's interesting. I was listening to the agenda a couple of days ago, and Georgia was talking to the regional head of the World Health Organization. Fascinating conversation. And he said just that. Everyone's talking about vaccines for COVID, which is important. But vaccines for other things are important as well. Things like measles. And if people aren't having those, then they will start spreading and we can have other problems as well. And it was a fascinating interview, extended, wide-ranging interview, but he made that very point. We cannot take our eye off other balls just because we're focusing on COVID when it comes to vaccines.
Yeah, and I mean, it goes back to the original point there. I mean, three warnings that have all come out overnight. All of these organisations, if they didn't give a warning at the moment, they would be out of touch with what's going on around the world. And we just had another one, didn't we? Christoph, you were just talking to from Colombia, the end of the conversation there, said, look, I'm sorry to paint such a bad picture, but there is a silver lining of sorts, although we don't refer to it as a silver lining, because none of us want to sit here and go, yeah, but there is reason to be positive here.
Yeah, you don't want to be the smug person's going, well, our economy's booming, so, you know.
Yeah.
No one wants to be saying that. Let's get a view to Dan Richards, Senior Economist, Emirates MBD. He's been reading the IMF Regional Economic Outlook. It's regional, it's Middle East and Central Asia. So it's kind of three reports in one. Middle East oil producers, Middle East oil importers, and the Central Asian region, which is, of course, on the doorstep of the conflict in Ukraine.
For the UAE, the IMF has revised up its forecast for growth this year from 3.0% previously to 4.2%. The fund noted in that regional economic outlook that these oil exporting countries, as I said, are going to benefit from higher oil prices, and these are going to more than offset the impact of tighter financial conditions from the higher interest rates. The central banks here hike in tandem with the US Federal Reserve. Well, I would note here that the IMF forecast is still actually lower than our house view of 5.7% growth this year in the UAE, and that's largely on the back of our expectation for higher oil production.
So that's the UAE and oil producers doing well. What about non-oil producers, oil importers, commodity importers?
Now, by contrast, the fund noted the rising challenges for the other MENA countries, especially those with a heavy reliance on wheat imports from the affected Black Sea region. For Egypt, for instance, almost 80% of its wheat imports come from that Ukraine-Russia region. And that's really going to have upwards pressure on prices there and in other countries around MENA. And the IMF has downgraded Egypt's growth outlook by 0.6 percentage points because of that impact of the war. Meanwhile, many lower-income countries in the region will also be affected by the global tightening of monetary policy and the effect this is having on investment.
Dan Richards of Emirates NBD.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Well, stock gaining yesterday in Abu Dhabi was Aldar Properties. The stock was up by 3% yesterday, closing at 5.65 dirhams. Over the past year, it has not quite doubled, but almost 3.5 dirhams this time last year, closing in on 6 dirhams right now. Let's find out why. The quarterly results were out yesterday, and the Chief Financial Officer joins us now on the line. He is a friend of the Business Breakfast, Greg Fewer. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Richard.
So another good set of numbers from Aldar. Profit was up significantly in the first quarter. What's the story?
Well, there's a few important things going on. So another record quarter for us in terms of sales, 2.2 billion in terms of sales. And a couple important trends that we're seeing show up in our numbers continuing from 2021. The first is a lot more international buyers coming into the Abu Dhabi market. We finished last year with about 44% of our buyers in that quarter coming from non-UAE nationals. And in the first quarter of 2022, we're seeing that number up around 60%. Very important trend that's continuing. The second is contributions from acquisitions that we've made. So a large part of our sales this quarter were coming from Sadiq, which was our acquisition in Egypt that took place at the end of the year. And that's an important story for Aldar. Anyone thinking about Aldar, you know, into 2022 needs to be thinking about growth because we have a significant war chest of capital to deploy. And what we're seeing this quarter is when we successfully deploy that capital, it's really accretive for our shareholders. We will be posting quarter on quarter increases in profit and revenue the more we deploy this capital, and we will.
Well, we'll get to Egypt in a second. And I know my colleague Tom has been following this story very, very closely. I'm going to bring him in a second. But first of all, in terms of foreign buyers, the big question is Russia, Greg. We know that here in Dubai, a lot of Russian buyers have been spending money on real estate. How important are they to you?
Look, the whole international buyer community that's familiar with the UAE is important to us. Abu Dhabi is in the early innings of its emergence onto the international property market. So we've got deep roots in India, deep roots in Europe, deep roots in China and Russia. And all of them are showing up on our register now in terms of the new sales. We launched probably our most internationally marketable development, which is the Louvre Residences at the Grove on Saadiyat. And that was launched in India and in Europe. And we've seen strong buying from both those jurisdictions.
What's the sweet spot at the moment for selling residential real estate in Abu Dhabi? Is it your, you know, half a million dirhams affordable? Is it your 50 million dirhams plus mansion? Where's the sweet spot for you?
The sweet spot right now is sort of upper middle income villa. So anything horizontal right now, really, there's a significant premium on that. On the acquisition front, again, you would have noticed earlier in the quarter, we acquired $1 billion plot of land on Saadiyat. That was speaking directly to this sweet spot that there's a deep, deep vein still to run on villa product in the 5, 6, 7, 8 million dirham range. We see deep, like lots of demand for it. And, you know, we're positioning ourselves to fulfill on that demand in the coming quarters.
And a quick word on Ras Al Khaimah, looking at the comments from your chief executive, Talal Al Diaby, talking about expanding into RAK. What's the sweet spot there?
Well, look, in RAK, we just find a really, really nice niche opportunity there. You know, we've acquired the Hamra Mall down in Marjan, the Rixos. I think we'll be deploying more capital into Ras Al Khaimah, a very attractive tourism market and a very attractive industrial market and great entry prices for investors.
Right then, let's talk about Egypt if we can. You mentioned it earlier. You have acquired Egypt's 6th of October for development and investment company, Sodic as it's known. I'm going to bring in Tom now. Tom, you've been looking at the general trend of investment from Abu Dhabi into Egypt.
Yeah, I mean, we focused a lot on it, didn't we, recently with Masdar signing that deal for green hydrogen projects in Egypt. That was just one of the biggest that we've seen in recent times. We've seen a lot of tech enablers down in Egypt and outside Egypt. Investment coming in and out of Cairo and the wider country of Egypt. It's just been very much in the news, high focus, and a lot of analysts saying it is an area and a region to watch.
So why? What was the big deal with Egypt, Greg?
You know, if you're serious about growth in our region, you really have to look at the main growth drivers. And so Saudi's a powerful source of growth. Egypt is a powerful source of growth. The demographics are excellent. And then you look at entry opportunities and investment opportunities. And there's a very strong G2G connection, which does open up opportunities. We have entered the Egyptian market with our partners at ADQ. That opens up a deep network for us to be able to leverage that network into expanding that platform in ways that it couldn't have expanded before. And we're very excited about the team there. We're very excited about that platform. We speak the same language in terms of our development DNA and our development priorities. So we're finding a lot of sources of synergy and complementarity to help expand growth there.
So, Greg, you're spending a lot of money, and I think you mentioned the phrase, you have a war chest there for investment in the UAE and elsewhere. But you're also attracting investment. You got investment from Apollo Global Management, more than $1 billion. Just, I know we've spoken about this before, but just remind us, what is that investment? Who is Apollo, and what are they investing that $1 billion plus in?
Yeah, so we announced a $1.4 billion capital partnership with Apollo. Apollo is one of the largest, you know, global asset managers on the planet with over $600 billion in assets under management. They're one of the global big boys. They have options to deploy and invest that capital all over the world. You know, and Abu Dhabi famously has been a source of outbound capital deployment for a long time, filling the LP base of a lot of these global managers. And now we're starting to see a lot of those managers put that money back into Abu Dhabi and acknowledging that the market for inbound investment in here is globally incredibly competitive. And so one of the investments they're making is a minority stake investment into Aldar Investments, Investment Properties, which is our REIT for want of a better term. And you know, with yields in Abu Dhabi at 7%, with a double A economy, low tax environment, free flow of capital in and out, as a global real estate investor, it is an absolutely irresistible proposition. And you're going to start to see a lot of more of that inbound capital come in as global investors start to acknowledge the region. The positive sentiment that's going on in here is acknowledged on a broader basis internationally. The reforms that have taken place in the UAE are making it much more friendly for inbound investment. And you'll see more of that, which will have an upward impact on values of real estate here.
Final question, Greg, not from me, but from one of our listeners, Tamara, who writes in saying, I live in Abu Dhabi and I'm concerned about the rising cost of living. What can you tell me about what you're doing to keep residential rents affordable in Abu Dhabi, Greg?
inflation is an issue that's affecting, you know, everyone around the planet right now. I think on balance, what we're finding is that the inflationary influences in the UAE right now are there. They're increasing, but they might not be as bad as what we see elsewhere and around the world in terms of some of the aggressive price hikes that have happened on gas and input prices. They're relatively muted here. Labor force cost inflation is coming here, but it's not as bad as what we're seeing elsewhere. So, look, it's an issue that's affecting everybody. But I'd say that the worst of it probably hasn't hit here yet, but it's not as bad in the UAE as it is elsewhere.
Greg, always great talking to you. Appreciate it. Thanks very much indeed. Good set of numbers from Aldar. Significant increase in quarterly profit. That's the Chief Financial Officer, Greg Feuer.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
One of the reasons the euro is falling is, of course, the situation in Ukraine, the war in Ukraine that continues into its third month right now. Joining us on the line to give us some perspective on that is senior research scholar in the Center on Global Energy Policy at Columbia University in the United States. Christoph Ruhl is in Europe at the moment, and he joins us now on the line and on Microsoft Teams. Christoph, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning to you.
Well, you're not a currency expert, so I'm not going to ask you about the demise of the euro, but I am going to ask you about the story behind that number. Severe challenges in Europe with the cutting off of gas supplies to Bulgaria and Poland over the past 24 hours. What do you make of it?
I think it's a very dangerous slippery slope on which we're moving now, because it might be the beginning of more. The two countries which have been cut off, Poland and Bulgaria, taken together, were the first ones which where the contracts had to be paid, so in a long line of payments for April deliveries, and they have been accused of not sticking to the ruble payments which Russia demands. And secondly, they are still very small. They account for about 8% of European gas imports from Russia. And thirdly, they have been sort of well prepared, especially the Poles, for the bigger of the two. They saw that coming, so their inventories are full. They are not having to resort to any emergency measures. So it's kind of a like sending a signal from on the part of Russia that we could flex our muscles even more. We pick those two guys, which we know can swim on over this and will survive, and the EU will survive as well. But it is the beginning of a development which many people would have hoped would not take place, these cut-off games.
Why is ruble payment so important to Russia? And I'll give you a bit of context. I mean, we've been looking at the ruble over the past 2.5 months or so here in Dubai. Of course, Russia, a major trading partner, tourism partner for us. And in terms of dirhams, before the invasion, one dirham was 21 Russian rubles. Then after a couple of weeks, it went to 38 Russian rubles. But now we're back to 21. We're back to where we were in terms of the ruble against the dirham or the dollar before the invasion. So why is ruble payment so important to Russia?
Let's do the first question. There's really two questions here. Why is the ruble so strong? That's an easy one. That's a bit of a red herring, because the ruble was sort of under the shock from the sanctions at first, lost value. Then severe restrictions were imposed on capital exports. And basically, Russia now is exporting a lot of energy, but not importing anything anymore under the sanctions. And so it's small wonder that the ruble increases, basically because it's not traded. You can't even find ruble anywhere. So that I wouldn't take too seriously, even though it matters for Russians who visit the UAE. The second question, why is Russia insisting on ruble payment? That's a bit of a strategy of annoyance, if I can so say. In economic terms, it's completely meaningless. The difference is whether, a German power plant, you know, transfers euros or dollars to Gazprom, and Gazprom takes it to the Russian central bank and switches it into rubles and does with the payment of salaries and stuff, or whether the German power plant now has to buy some rubles and transfers, has an account at Gazprom Bank, puts euros there, transfers them into rubles, gives them to Gazprom, and Gazprom sort of does what it has done before. The difference is only mechanical, and it's only really forcing the Europeans to lose face a little bit by touching the ruble, which is under sanctions, by having to open these accounts, which is dubious whether that's covered by the contracts or not. So it's a strategy, a little bit of tit for tat and being annoying. And because the Europeans have said, we're not going to do this, they are now sort of in this corner where Russia can say, look, this is a very minor technical adjustment and you don't want to do it. We don't give you any gas anymore. So it's part of the ratcheting up business. Economically, it's entirely meaningless. It's all politics.
Okay, let's talk about Germany. I know you've been looking at this very, very closely. Clearly for Poland and Bulgaria, it's a big deal having their gas cut off. For the global economy, the big story is Germany.
Yeah, so and here's where the risk is. No? So from both sides, for Russia and for Europe. Germany is the world's fourth largest economy. It's the world's biggest exporter. Everybody is afraid of this crisis somehow creating an economic recession. If the economy in Germany sort of really suffers from that because they would have to blackout and so on, then we have a reason to really talk about supply bottlenecks and supply shortages, which are a big topic already. It's going to be worse than if China is affected. And the exports from Germany are more sophisticated, so they're going to be more painful for the global economy. That's one risk. And Germany is the biggest client of Russia and is still dependent on gas. They cannot replace it overnight like other countries can. But also on the part of Russia, Russia exports a total of 210, what's called billion cubic meters, 160 of which go to Europe. And this all comes from the west of Siberia. Now, very importantly, there is no pipeline from western Siberia to eastern Siberia and on to Asia. So if Russia really cuts Europe off, it loses all the revenues and the gas becomes stranded. And we are talking about an estimated at current prices $110 billion over the next 8 months. So both sides have massive stakes here, and economically, you would just hope that it doesn't escalate. But we all know, you know, in love and war, everything is possible and everything is legitimate. So it seems to be now a start down this very slippery road, which has real economic dangers.
30 seconds left. We've got questions coming in. Suresh, one of our listeners, has written in saying, it cost me 180 dirhams to fill up my family saloon yesterday. The price of filling up petrol here in the UAE is rising, and this is what people care about in any country in the world. What can you say to Suresh about the likely direction of oil prices going forward, and therefore the likely cost it's going to cost him and others to fill up their car in Dubai, Abu Dhabi or elsewhere?
Well, more bad news coming because the European Union, of course, got hit by this story in Poland or Bulgaria while they're negotiating an embargo of Russian oil, a gradual cutting of Russia from oil. That's also one of the motives for Russia to up the ante. So don't expect oil prices to relax anytime soon.
Christoph, it's great talking to you. Sorry. Appreciate your time this morning. I know it's not the message you want to hear, but you're being candid and honest, and we appreciate that. Christoph,
there's good news in that. You know, the UAE has sort of global gasoline prices they don't subsidize. They will not have the sudden jump which you will see in India and countries like that.
Well, where we are insulated, in the IMF report overnight certainly said that, you know, our economic growth is strong. So yeah, it's a very, very valid point. Christoph Ruhl is Senior Research Scholar, Center on Global Energy Policy at Columbia University in the United States, although he joins us live from Europe this morning. Christoph, always good speaking. Appreciate your time.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Joining us live in studio is the Managing Director of Spass Real Estate. It is Mr. John Lyons. Morning, John.
Good morning, Tom.
Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Thanks very much indeed. Nice to have you as well, especially off the back of that conversation with Aldor. I'm going to ask you about developers in general a little later on and the ongoing relationship between developers and the industry as a whole. But before that, a couple of big buzz questions that have been germinating throughout the week. But again, if you've got any questions for John, get them in to us now. You can text them on 4001. The visa regulations and rules. Last time we chatted with you, it was all pretty fresh. You know, we were all trying to work out the small print, and we were trying to work out whether you buy a home to get a visa or do you get a visa to get a home, etc. And what's the best segment? With the sort of new regulations and golden visa, and with the benefit of 2 weeks of hindsight for us to read small print and try and gauge more understanding of it, is it still a good deal when it comes to real estate?
Yeah, I think it's an excellent deal. And without going into every single visa that you can possibly apply for, the easiest one to get your head around is the 2 million dirham point. If you buy a property for 2 million dirhams in cash, then you can be eligible for a 5-year golden visa. And I think that's great for the real estate market because that's a pretty low entry point when you look globally at where else you can get residency attached to property investment.
Who's this target, though? I mean, we've talked a lot this morning about the attractiveness of the UAE specifically to buy, but the UAE as a whole is a place for digital nomads coming over here looking to further their options. Is that who this visa better targets, or is it for retirees, or is it for those looking to invest in a second home?
I think it's for many different people from all over the world. It's obviously at 2 million dirhams, it's targeting what would be quite an economically active demographic. Mm. So to be able to say to the whole world, come here to Dubai and buy a property for 2 million dirhams and you can have a 5-year residency in one of the safest countries in the world. Sun, sea, sand. It's a great place, as we all know. And it just increases the choice for people wherever they live in the world.
It's 5 years. Does that equate to longer ownership, though, as well?
I think it probably does, because the visa will be attached to your ownership of the property. So this is probably a good thing for the property market. If you know that your residency is attached to that ownership, you're less likely to try and flip it and quickly buy and quickly sell. And that probably increases stability in the market. It also increases demand for real estate. And in the end of the day, Dubai needs to build a lot more properties to satisfy the demand from population growth. So to be able to open up different routes to capital, that's a good thing for the market.
Okay, I think you've just hit on something that I wanted to discuss, which was the supply and demand issue at the moment. And there's no doubt in that there is an issue, just because there is so much demand out there. Supply was on a bit of hold during the pandemic as well. Now, obviously, it's being ramped up yet again. But, okay, let's have a look at this. UAE Golden Visa and all the other incentives to get people to come and call the UAE home that have been put in place. Surely that's just going to put yet more pressure on the demand, the supply and demand issue. And with increased demand, are people therefore not going to get put off?
Well, obviously the population is growing. It's part of the growth story of this whole region. And this will help to encourage more population growth. The supply is maybe a problem temporarily, but it shouldn't be a problem long term. There's a lot of land, there's a lot of appetite to build, and there's the great developers to build product that the people want. So over the long term, I don't think it will be an issue.
To that end, can I ask you a couple of questions that come through about developers? I'm conscious of the fact that we just heard there from Greg Fewer of Aldar Properties. Just a reaction to those numbers as well. 23% jump in first quarter profit. When developers are doing well, surely that's good for the industry as a whole.
Absolutely. There's no question that developers are doing exceptionally well. In Dubai, for example, the off-plan market is, I think there's about double the number of transactions Q1 this year compared to Q1 last year. So developers must be doing exceptionally well right now.
A couple of questions coming on in the back of that one. Housing is comparatively expensive when compared to the rest of the world. Is there a reason that developers don't offer a guarantee of their buildings beyond 1 to 2 years, like in developed countries where work can be guaranteed for 10 years or more?
Well, I think the starting point is I don't really consider Dubai to be very expensive in a global context.
Yeah.
You have to compare Dubai to other cities that are comparable, so major population hubs of other regions in the world. And Dubai looks cheap. If you compare it to London, Singapore, Sydney, Hong Kong, it's not an expensive place. And I think there's still plenty of room for further appreciation.
Let's talk Ramadan if we can. We mentioned last time you were in, John, about Ramadan and the tradition that there usually used to be deals around for Ramadan, etc., across the board. And I asked you the question whether Ramadan was a good time to look, to invest, to buy, etc. Given the fact that we are coming to the end of Ramadan, what's Ramadan 2022 been like for?
It's been business as usual. And for many years, I've been saying that Ramadan is business as usual. The market doesn't all of a sudden slow down dramatically. To give you an idea of some of our own data, we saw 8% less viewings in the first 3 weeks of Ramadan compared to the first 3 weeks of March, but we saw 8% more listings. We had 16% more buyers register in the first 3 weeks of Ramadan compared to that first 3 weeks of March. And it doesn't look much different in terms of the number of deals being signed. Although it was down by 10% for Aspas, last week, the third week of Ramadan, was the highest week for signed deals ever in our history. So although some metrics are down and some are up, it's marginal. And I think it would be within the normal range of standard deviation that you would expect to see when you compare any three-week period to another three-week period. So for me, that sort of proves the point that it's business as usual. It's up, it's down, it's sideways. It's not dramatically one way or the other.
Okay, so to that point, traditionally as well, hot summer months, especially July, August, have been slow periods for property. Will it be the same this year?
It is traditionally slow for sales. So sales slows down a little bit. Our leasing department actually are very active during the summer months, because there's many people moving to Dubai to settle before the academic year starts. So when we talk about the real estate market, we can consider that some parts of it are a little bit lower and some parts of it are more active.
One quick question before we let you go, John. It's come through from one of our listeners. Ashish has been in touch, said, nice to hear from John. John, is it time to buy or wait for apartments in Dubai, especially in JLT or The Views?
I think it depends on your own personal situation. I always like to ask the question, which is, what if I get it wrong? Now, if you wait and the prices go up next year and your mortgage cost goes up next year, then waiting was a bad idea. Over the long term, it doesn't really pay to wait. But if you buy now and you get it wrong, and let's say prices are a little bit lower 12 months from now, the question is, are you buying with 12 months in mind, or are you looking through a longer time period, 5-10 years? I always advise property buyers to buy with a slightly longer term in mind. And then if you get it slightly wrong, it doesn't really matter what the price of the property is worth 12 months from now. It matters what it's worth 5 years from now. If that's the case, then waiting doesn't usually pay off. It hasn't done over historical data. Buying now, if you can afford it and if it's right for you. It's not right for everyone, but if it is right for you and you're thinking long term, then buying now is never a bad decision to make.
Good on you, John. Much appreciated. John Lyons, MD of Aspas Real Estate.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.